Chapter 12. When Dorian had first been studying to become a Hothsalar, a brother of healing, he'd invented a little weave to mimic the symptoms of influenza by killing the life that inhabited the stomach, with devastating results that cleared up within a day or two. Several times, to Solon's and Fi'ir's vast amusement, Dorian had used it for other than scholarly reasons. Now, influenza swept through the eunuchs, and Half-Man was pressed into double shifts and unfamiliar tasks. He'd even made himself sick first, to eliminate suspicion. Today, two of the most trusted eunuchs were sick. Half-Man climbed the stairs to the Tiger Tower, an unheated basalt obscenity that looked on the verge of toppling in a high wind. He moved past thousands of great marsupial cats. They looked like wolves with exaggerated maws, sword-like canines, and orange and black stripes. Everywhere one looked, the tigers looked back. There were tapestries, etchings, tiny statues, ancient, mangy stuffed specimens, necklaces of teeth, paintings of tigers tearing apart children. The styles were a hodgepodge, unimportant. All that had mattered to Berthold Ursul was that they featured sword-toothed tigers. Dorian reached the top of the tower, breathless, shivering from the cold, sorry that the food he'd carried had long lost its warmth, and apprehensive about who would be up here. If she were one of the talented wives or concubines, she might smell the magic on him. The depth of the women's ensnarement was such that any who found a traitor would report him immediately. Dorian knocked on the door. When it opened, his breath whooshed out. She had long, dark hair, large, dark eyes, a slender but shapely figure under a shapeless dress. No cosmetics heightened her eyes, and none rouged her lips. She wore no jewelry. She smiled, and his heart stopped. He'd never met her, but he knew that smile. He had seen that dimple on the left side, a little deeper than the one on the right. She was the one. "My lady," Dorian said. She smiled. She was a small young woman with sad, kind eyes. "So young. You can speak," she said, and her voice was light and pure and strong, the kind of voice that begged to sing. "They've only sent deaf mutes before. What's your name?" "It is death for me to speak, milady, and yet..." "How afraid of them are you?" Half-Man asked. Giving his real name was the ultimate commitment. He wanted to throw it down at her feet and abandon himself to her whim. But that was madness, on a par with the madness he'd escaped by throwing away his gift of prophecy. Janine paused, biting her lip. Her lips were full, pink, despite the coolness of this high tower. Dorian, for Half-Man would never have dared, couldn't help but imagine kissing those soft, full lips. He blinked, forcing things carnal from his mind, impressed that this young woman was actually devoting thought to his question. In Kalidor, fear was wisdom.
"I'm always afraid here," she said. "I don't believe I will betray you, but if they torture me..." She scowled. "That isn't much to give, is it? I will keep your confidence to the last extremity I can endure. It is a poor and lame vow, but I have been stripped of riches outside and in."
She smiled then, the same beautiful, sad smile. And he loved her. May the God who saved him have mercy. He couldn't believe it was happening so fast. He'd never believed in instant love. Such a thing could surely be only infatuation or lust, and he couldn't deny that he felt both. But at seeing her, he had an odd feeling of meeting an old friend. His Modaini friend, Antoninus Wervel, said such things happened when those who had known each other in past lives met. Dorian didn't believe that. Perhaps, instead, it was his visions. At Screaming Winds, he'd been in trances for weeks. Though his memory had been mostly scoured of those images, he knew he'd lived lifetimes with this woman in those visions. Perhaps that had primed him for love, for he believed that this was real love, that here was the woman to whom he would yield body and mind and soul and future and hopes, unflinching. He would marry her or no one. She would bear his son or no one would. It was either that, or the insanity Dorian had feared for so long had finally caught up with him. "They call me Halfman," he said. "But I am Dorian Orsul, first acknowledged son and heir to Gareth Orsul, and long since stricken from the Citadel's records for my betrayal of the God King and his ways." "I don't understand," she said. Her forehead wrinkled. He'd seen that wrinkle in his visions, when it had become a worry line, permanent on her brow. He had to stop himself from reaching a hand up to smooth it away. It would be too familiar. By the God, he thought he'd left all the confusions of being a prophet behind. "Why are you here?" "For you, Jenny." She stiffened. "You may call me Your Highness, or, as you have evidently come at great risk, you may call me Janine." "Yes, of course, Your Highness." Dorian's head swirled. Here he was, a prince himself, being granted permission to address a young girl by her full name. That grated, and it disappointed. Love at first sight was bad enough, but finding out that it wasn't mutual, well, he would have thought her a flighty girl if she'd thrown himself at him, wouldn't he?
"I think you'd better explain yourself," she said. "Stupid, Dorian, stupid. She's far from home. She's seen her land laid waste by your people. She's isolated, she's scared. And you're not exactly at your best for romance, are you? Ah, hell! She thinks I'm a eunuch."
There was a nice dilemma. How does one interject into a polite conversation? "By the way, in case you're ever interested, I do have a penis."
"I know it seems implausible, Your Highness," he said, "but I've come to help you escape."
She put her hands on her hips, damn, she was cute, and said,
"Oh, I see. You're a prince, I'm a princess trapped in a tall tower. You're here to rescue me, how droll. You can go tell Gareth I got teary-eyed and breathless, and then you can go to hell."
Dorian rubbed his forehead. If only the snippets he remembered of his visions had given him good ways to deal with Janine's anger.
"All I need to know, Your Highness, is if you want to leave and risk death, or if you'd rather stay in your comfortable tower until my father, who's old enough to be your grandfather, comes to take your dignity, your maidenhead, and your sanity. You're a little old for my father's preferences, but since you're a princess, I'm sure he'd give you a chance. If you produce a talented son,
You'll be allowed to live. You will watch him grow up, only from a distance, so that your womanly weakness doesn't cripple him. When he's 13 years old, the two of you will be reunited and allowed to spend the next 2 months together. Then my father will surprise both of you by visiting personally and asking what you've taught his seed in the time he's given you. It doesn't matter. What matters is it will be the first time your son will have had a God's undivided attention. At the end of the interview, your son will be asked to kill you. It's a test few fail. Her big eyes had gotten huge.
You didn't fail it, did you?
The North is a brutal mistress, Your Highness. No one leaves her without scars, Dorian said. I've got a plan, but it won't be ready for 5 days, and everything depends on getting through the pass to Sonaria before the snow flies and the passes close. All I need to know is, if I risk my life to come again, will you leave with me? He could count the heartbeats while she thought. She surveyed her prison with clenched teeth. She pulled her high collar aside, and Dorian saw a scar so wide he knew she must have been healed with magic almost immediately. A cut throat like that would have left her dead in a minute or two.
Back home in Sonaria, I was secretly in love. Logan was a good man, a true friend to my brother, intelligent, and half the women in the city were after him because he was so handsome. The other half were after him because he was the heir to a duchy. Logan Gyre would have been a good match for me, and for our families. But there was bad blood between our fathers, so I never dared hope my dream might come true. Then an assassin murdered my brother, and my father was left without an heir. He thought that if he made Logan his heir, it would forestall attempts on his own life. So Logan and I married. 2 hours later, Caladorans murdered my entire family to eliminate the heirs to the throne. But a witch named Nef Dada thought I was too pretty to throw away. So he cut my throat in front of my husband and healed me afterward. Logan they killed later, after subjecting him to God know what tortures. These people have taken everything I love. She turned, and her eyes were molten steel. I'll be ready. Dorian picked up her bread knife. With his talent, he elongated it and gave it 2 edges, while she watched. There's an Ethling named Tavi, he said. He's fearless while the God King's still in Sonaria. He may come to dishonor you. If he does, my advice is to only use this if you have the perfect opportunity. Otherwise, don't throw away your life. The look in her eyes told him if Tavi came, Janine would try to kill him. Failing that, she'd turn the knife on herself. And yet, Dorian gave her the knife, knowing she deserved the choice. Now, he said, perhaps we can speak of lighter things. Sorry that your food is cold. The hike up the Damsel in Distress's tower is a long one. She smiled at that, a little, shy smile that reminded him of her age and made him feel like a degenerate old predator. She fingered the dagger he'd shaped for her. You really are a witch, aren't you?
Not now. That magic is evil. I left it long ago and trained with the Magi.
Could you use your magic to bring me warm food?
Her eyes sparkled with mischief, and as they laughed together, he fell in love with her all over again. If I could manage a disguise that convinced Yorbus Zerga I'm a eunuch, I think I can warm your food here. And he warmed her gruel right then, hoping his "I do have a penis" was subtle enough. She cocked an eyebrow at him. Here I was, thinking that if I'd been in an enchanted sleep and my prince needed to awaken me, I'd have been out of luck. Ah, in the books I've read, he wakes her with a kiss, Dorian said. You've been reading the wrong books. Dorian coughed and blushed, and Janine giggled wickedly. They spoke for hours. For the next 4 days, Dorian warmed the princess's meals, and the princess warmed to him. She was still devastated by the loss of her family and her kingdom and her husband, but his presence gave her hope. He saw the beautiful, sunny girl she had been emerge, and he saw evidence of the decisive, shrewd, charismatic woman she would become. Dorian's respect and love and desire for her grew. They were the happiest days of his life.